what I always do with every business I have is I spend time where I leave my office. I even change clothes if I have to. And I go just spend time. I hang out. I'm not selling anything. I'm just listening. Sitting in restaurants, going to schools, whatever it is. I hang out where that customer is and I listen to how they tell stories to each other and what they seem to get engaged in. And by listening to them, I determine how to better talk to them and what kind of stories and what kind of approaches resonated with them. So the answer is not in your office. And if you spend time not talking, but just listening around them, you will get better and better at determining how to deliver your message to the right people.
So you're a smart business committed to innovation, to service, and to modern marketing. And you're asking, what's next? Wondering how you can become even more innovative. My name is Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and this is the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we share all kinds of tips, advice, and interview guests on all things innovation and leadership in modern marketing. Hi, innovators. It's great to be back with another episode. I hope you've had an awesome week so far. I trust you enjoyed our most recent interviews with marketer Latisha Stiles and Wayne Smallman of Octane Interactive. I'm really excited to have on the InnovaBuzz podcast as my guest today, Jeff Hoffman. Jeff is a successful entrepreneur. He's a proven CEO. He's a worldwide motivational speaker, a published author, a Hollywood film producer, and a producer of a Grammy-winning jazz album. He's founded multiple startups, has been the CEO of both public and private companies, and has been part of some well-known companies, including Priceline.com, which is known as Bookings.com for my Australian friends, Ubid.com, ColourJar, and more. Now, I do encourage you to read the rest of his amazing bio, because if I were to read that out here, this episode would go for ages, and I don't want to do that. But Jeff has had an amazing life. He's achieved a lot and continues to excel, and it's just such an honor to have him speak to us on the InnovaBuzz podcast. Today's episode is brought to you by the Transformational Marketing Hub, where you'll find a host of free and exceptionally useful information to help transform your marketing. You can access the Transformational Marketing Hub by visiting innovabiz.co/VIP. If you don't yet have an account, don't worry, click the blue Take a Peek Inside button. As I said, it's free and exceptionally useful, and especially for you, my podcast audience. In our discussion today, Jeff talked to me about getting out of your office regularly and spending a day in the life of your customer, in their environment, where they hang out, and listen to the conversations they have. We talked about building products by solving problems that you encounter and that other people will have, and those people value getting rid of that problem. And Jeff told us about his philosophy on storytelling and how to craft stories that are meaningful to your audience by involving your customers or audience. Without further ado then, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Jeff Hoffman. Hi, I'm your host, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to welcome today to the InnovaBuzz podcast from a very wintry Ohio, he tells me, in the USA, Jeff Hoffman. He's a highly successful entrepreneur. He's one of the co-founders of Priceline.com. He's a motivational speaker and a generous philanthropist and humanitarian. Welcome to the podcast, Jeff. It's a real privilege to have you as a guest.
Thank you so much for having me today. Looking forward to this.
Erica Kastner, who was our guest on episode 132 of the InnovaBuzz podcast, suggested that we interview you, Jeff, and introduced us. So a big hello to Erica.
Yes. And again, thank you very much for making that happen.
Yeah. Now, you've spoken in over 50 countries on the topics of innovation, entrepreneurship, branding, marketing, and business leadership. You've spoken at the United Nations on the topic of international cooperation. So I'm really looking forward to our conversation today. Now, before we start talking about all things innovation and entrepreneurship and business, tell us a little bit about your background. How did you get to where you are today, and what were some of the pivotal moments in that journey?
Sure. I'm an engineer by trade, but to be honest, and many of your listeners have been through the same thing, I became an engineer not because that was my dream, but because my parents said, go study so you can get a good job, yeah. Good salary, which I did. I got a software engineering degree, got a good job at an engineering company, had a good salary. I just didn't have a good life. I did not actually enjoy my job at all, and I did not enjoy the large engineering company that I work for in particular. So I didn't become an entrepreneur because I wanted to be a quote entrepreneur. I didn't even know what that word was. Or because I wanted money. What I wanted was to have a life where I could work on things that really interested me and focus on the work and not the sort of internal company politics I had at the big company. So I quit after only a few years out of college, one engineering job, and I started my own company for those reasons, in search of freedom. But what I like doing, well, here's two things. I have this horrible DNA problem with inefficiency. It drives me crazy. The person in line that everybody's getting angry at because I'm saying, how is this line so long and how could this possibly take so long? And everybody else is saying, tell that guy to shut up and wait.
Yeah.
Because of my disdain for inefficiency, but I also love problem solving. So I have this habit where when something seems wrong and inefficient, what I want to do is take it apart and figure out if there's a better way. Those happen to be good personality traits for entrepreneurship. So I started my very first company. So I've been an entrepreneur the whole rest of my career. I've done 8 startups. But my very first company literally started standing in a long line in an airport where I got very frustrated. The line was so long to check in that I missed the flight. And in my anger, I said, this is ridiculous. There has to be a better way to check in for a flight. And I went home literally the next day, and that was my first startup. I started a company to design my first product.
Mm, yeah, I love that idea of taking what makes you angry, identifying that as a problem, pulling it apart so that you say, well, you know, there's inefficiencies there that you've identified and we can make this better.
Yeah, it's sort of what we find ourselves doing as human beings is complaining about things, but then everybody goes home and goes back to what they're doing. And, you know, I think one of the most important traits of being a good entrepreneur is when you find yourself in a situation where you're complaining about something, stop and ask the following few questions. Is this a problem that bothers a lot of people or is it just me? And if it bothers a lot of people, then the question is there a better way to do this? And if you think there is, there's a third question. And the third question is, yeah, but is this a business? If I went and fixed this, would people be happy enough that I made it better that they'd pay me to do it? And if the answer to all three of those questions is yes, then you probably have a company. That's when you say, okay, I'm going to go fix this problem. I'm going to make money doing it. And I'm going to make it better for everybody. And that's been our entrepreneurial ventures that were successful were when we fixed real problems that people, a lot of people were complaining about that had value to people to be fixed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's great advice there. I love those three questions and not just taking the complaining attitude and not doing anything about it. And I think that was the philosophy you had when you first started your first business, when you said, well, I wasn't happy at work, so I'm going to do something about that.
Yes, and that first problem, the first company, again, I was waiting to check in for a flight back then at an airport, and the line was an hour long. The airport was busy, and by the time I got my boarding pass, the flight was already gone. So first product, which hopefully some of your listeners have used, if you go to an airport now around the world, you check yourself in on a kiosk, and you get your own boarding pass, your own boarding card at a kiosk, and that was my first product. Patented them and started selling them to airports all over the world. just to make it easier to check in for a flight.
Hmm. Yeah, and I imagine that anybody who's traveled has been recently has used those. I certainly did the last time I traveled, and it makes a huge difference. I hate standing in line. So you're right. That is a problem that other people have as well.
Yeah, and that's the thing you want to look for.
Hmm. All right. So what is it you do today then? Because I know you mentioned that you've done 8 startups, and I think you've probably sold a lot of them and maybe not actively involved in them. What do you do today and why do you do it?
Yeah. So after all those, and, you know, we had, I was part of successful companies. Of course, in the United States, we called our travel company Priceline, but in Australia, that's a pharmacy.
That's right, yeah.
In Australia, you know, the company is booking.com, but it's the same company.
Hmm.
So we had, I was part of startups like that that were very successful. We had startups that failed. We had some we sold, some we took public. But I had made a commitment to giving back, and I was able to live a lot of my own dreams because I was an entrepreneur. I got to do a lot of things I wanted to do because I designed companies that gave me that opportunity. And I wanted to sort of pay back that opportunity. And what I decided to do was use the second half of my life to give back by teaching other people the skills of entrepreneurship so they could design their own future the way I did mine. So what I do now is I've really dedicated all my time to this giving back commitment I made. And I travel around the world and mentor entrepreneurs. You know, I did a few months ago, I met with entrepreneurs in Sydney and Perth and Melbourne and Brisbane. I went all across Australia, 6 cities down in New Zealand. So I do these tours frequently around the world and in my own country, just mentoring entrepreneurs and teaching them the things that we learn the hard way. I wish someone had taught me this. About how to start companies and how to scale and grow companies. So I spend all my time really mentoring entrepreneurs around the world.
Okay. Now, I saw a presentation you did, and it may have been a YouTube presentation. It may have been one of those mentoring events, but you talked about entertainment and blending. I think the words were something like blending interactive storytelling and transmedia, and bringing the viewer into the story. And this may have been in context of your filmmaking adventures, but I thought that was a really great metaphor for having content that is engaging for the audience, and particularly in the light of education, mentoring, inspiration. So what do you feel about using entertainment and storytelling in delivering a message?
Yeah, so I'm so glad you asked that because it's so important. And part of the reason that even though I started out in the tech business and I'm a software engineer, part of the reason I went into the entertainment space in films and television and music was to learn the skills of storytelling because they're very good at it, right? Mm-hmm. I remember one time, especially Hollywood, one time, you know, waiting for weeks till Friday came because that new movie was coming out. We went, we stood outside in a big line to get into the new movie. And we spent a lot of money on tickets and popcorn and drinks. And the movie was horrible. And I thought, man, how did they get me so excited?
Yeah.
So engaged that I couldn't wait to go to this horrible movie and spend all this money. And the answer was Hollywood's good storytellers. They got me involved in the story and I wanted to see how it ended. And so I got into that space to study storytelling for the use in content, because so many people push out the content that is the thing they want to say. But what they don't spend enough time in is thinking about, at the other end of your content, what is the thing those people want to hear? No one but you actually cares what you want to say. And they all care about what they want to hear. So it helped me understand that to have engaging content, I've got to have a story that invites the listener, the reader of your content, the consumer of it, to come along. They don't want to sit passively and read a story. They want to be part of it. They want to be invited in, and they want to feel like they're taking a journey with you. So the best content is the content that invites the reader somewhere they want to go and takes them along for the journey so they feel like they're in the story with you, not that they're passively reading, you know, your journal about what happened to you yesterday. And so we've worked very hard as we created content for all of our products and services to make sure that we told stories that the consumer wanted to hear and that our content invited you into the content and not left you outside passively. Now, that's a lot of what I learned about studying the way the film and television business does their storytelling.
Okay. And how do you go about, so let's say you have a message or a speech you want to deliver about a particular topic and there's a message you want to convey. How do you go about structuring that entertaining story in a way that the listener feels as though they're part of it, feels as though this is what I want to hear, but at the same time, your message is being received?
Sure. So, you know, we didn't know the answer to that question. And part of the way that I learned that, and this is what I tell entrepreneurs and business owners now, people that were creating any kind of content in the world, part of what I learned was you're never going to come up with that answer sitting in your office. So what I started doing was scheduling time to be out of my office and to spend a day in the life of my customer. And I want to share with you a quick story of who I learned that from. I was spending the day with this older gentleman who was in the retail business, and his retail concepts found a way to appeal to a market segment that other rest of retail couldn't seem to appeal to, which was small towns and farmers and stuff. And big box retailers were staying out of small towns because they just couldn't tell a story. They couldn't communicate with those people. And I asked this gentleman who was building large retail stores in small towns and farm towns and rural towns. I said, how did you know how to do this? How to get your message across? And he said, because I started changing clothes out of my business clothes, putting on the same clothes the farmers wear, and driving to their little towns and spending the day hanging around the cafes where the farmers were and eating pie with them and drinking coffee with them and listening to the way they tell stories to each other so I could figure out what worked. And that really resonated with me. The interesting part of that story is that man that I spent the day with was named Sam Walton, and his store is called Walmart. Mm-hmm. I said, Sam, everybody in the retail business either failed or didn't even try to build big retail stores in small towns. And he said, that's because none of them got to know the farmer. So I took Sam's lesson. And what I always do with every business I have is I spend time where I leave my office. I even change clothes if I have to. And I go just spend time. I hang out. I'm not selling anything. I'm just listening. Sitting in restaurants, going to schools, whatever it is. I hang out where that customer is. And I listen to how they tell stories to each other and what they seem to get engaged in. And by listening to them, I determine how to better talk to them and what kind of stories and what kind of approaches resonated with them. So the answer is not in your office.
Yeah.
Stay in the life of your end, the consumer of that content. And if you spend time not talking, but just listening around them, you will get better and better at determining how to deliver your message to the right people.
Yeah, that's wonderful advice. I really like that. And it relates back to another thing I heard you talking about, the idea of infosponging, which, you know, no doubt will come up in the questions later on about innovation, but where you expose yourself to those experiences by just immersing in that.
Yes, you just have to get out of your bubble and your neighborhood and your office and go immerse yourself in these other worlds that you wouldn't normally spend time in. Because that's where the answer is. It's not in your office.
Mm. All right. Now, you mentioned earlier about identifying something that bothers you, something that you get annoyed by, that's inefficient, and then asking those questions to take that forward into perhaps an idea. So how do you approach those new opportunities from that point on? If you say, okay, somebody... other people have this problem as well, that there should be a better way of doing it. People will pay for that better way of doing it. How do you then approach that from there?
You know, I think the first step, well, there's two things. The first step is you have to be willing to do your homework. I spent a lot of long days and nights reading and researching and even cold calling. There were people I would reach out to and say, hey, so my first one was in the airline business. So I was just cold emailing people. Look, I'm trying to understand how this works in your industry. Would you be interested in talking about what you do and how it works? And a lot of people don't reply or say no. But if you're willing to keep trying, somebody out there loves talking about what they do. And they say, sure, stop by sometime. I'll tell you how this works. And so I, in addition to that, I was reading everything that I could. You have to love learning. And so, you know, I love learning new things that I don't already know. I would not want to do the same thing for my whole life because I feel like I stop growing when I'm not attacking something new. So the first part is do your homework. You have to do a lot of research. You have to reach out a lot of people. You have to ask a lot of questions. And you have to really study that business, that problem, and that industry. But the other part is to build a team, right? So there are a lot of things about an industry I don't know. And there are people that have worked their whole lives in that industry. Now, without me, those people might do the same thing they've always done and never find an innovative new way. But for me, without them, I might have an innovative new way, but I have no idea how to implement it in the existing environment. So you got a team with domain experts, people that know that industry, and then creative people. So we put all those together. And when you have a team that's a mix of people with different backgrounds, your odds of being able to solve that problem are much higher. So that's my two things. Do your research, do your homework, spend a lot of time studying. And the other one is go out and find people that already have expertise that you don't and add them to your team. And when we started to put those multidisciplinary teams together, we started to come up with solutions that actually worked in existing industries.
Hmm. Yeah, that's great advice. Now, I think it raises another question in my mind. When you bring together a team of people like that, and I'm imagining that some of your teams are global, multinational, because of the nature of the businesses, how do you go about bringing everybody onto the same page with the same vision and the same drive to make what you're trying to do succeed or give it the best chance of success?
You know, I think that that is entirely a cultural thing. You have to build that kind of culture into your company. And that means some people don't make it. Some people work. And so we focus very heavily on that culture of, you know, we're all in one boat and everybody pulls together. Everybody shares ideas of different ideas and different perspectives and different backgrounds. But what I have everybody agree on is we're all going to lay our ideas out, but in the end, we all have to steer the same direction. So management listens to everybody's input. But once we make a decision, you're all on one team. And everybody has to agree that, thanks for discussing it. We've decided to turn left here. All the people that wanted to go right or stay straight, you're turning left with us. you have to say. And if you don't have a culture of people that in the end know that the team as a whole has to win, not you individually, then you got a different problem. And so that's what we focused on. We focused on building a culture of sharing, but a culture of mutual respect for diverse ideas and a culture of saying in the end, let's pick a direction and let's all pull together. And that's our culture, so people feel excited about doing that.
Hmm. And you build that culture right from the beginning.
Yes, right from the beginning. Hmm. If you are a one-person company, you should be starting at the beginning and saying, what kind of culture are we going to build here? What kind of people do we want? What kind of attitude do we want? What are our values? So from the beginning, as you start building a team, you're not running into those problems because you don't hire people for their CV or resume. You hire by culture, not by resume, so that you get the kind of people that you already know are going to be good team players for you.
Hmm. Yeah, and I think what you just said there is one of the big secrets that I find is probably critical to having a successful hire. Yes, there are some basic skill sets you want. I mean, you don't hire somebody that, let's say, for developing software, you don't hire somebody that doesn't know anything about computers at all. But at the same time, the focus really should be on the cultural fit. And that, to me, is where the difference between having a successful hire and not a successful hire. And a lot of times people ask me, what's your secret about hiring people? And I explain that a little bit, but a lot of people don't get it.
No, they really don't. And they hire too much just for the skill set instead of focusing on that cultural fit is often more important.
Mm. And I have to, you know, I have to put my hand up and say, well, when I was in the corporate world, it took me quite a long time to learn that. And I had some bitter lessons there where I did hire for skill set first and it wasn't a good cultural fit. And that was a very painful situation for not just me, but for the whole team.
Yes, indeed. Hard lessons learned. You know, I'm talking about a lot of this now in hindsight, right?
Yeah.
Looking back.
That's right.
What worked and what didn't work now. And that's the whole point of, you know, coming on your podcast to try to share the lessons we learned.
Mm. Yeah. And I really appreciate that. And of course, learning from other people's mistakes, I was going to say, but really it's just feedback, the feedback that they've gotten already, and getting that feedback up front is a really valuable lesson to take away.
Yes, indeed.
Talking about culture, one of the things that I also heard you say around one of your businesses, and I imagine this pervades all the businesses, is really knowing the customer and what's important to them. And it's consistent with what you were talking about earlier in terms of storytelling, getting out in front of the customer and so on. And I think there was one of your businesses that had a cardboard cutout of Jane in the front office. Tell us a little bit about that.
That came from the story I told you about Sam Walton, the founder of Walmart.
Okay, yeah.
When he was telling us, you know, and by the way, I do that now, like one Friday every month, I schedule to be out of my office and go visit and go spend time with my customers. That was Sam's lesson. And what I realized, though, is that your customer, you can't be with them all the time. So I got this idea that I wanted them to be with me all the time. So what we did was make cardboard cutouts of our customer. And we put the cardboard cutouts all over the office. So there's a cardboard cutout, one of my companies, UBID. Our customer was Jane, the housewife. And we put a cutout of Jane in the conference room. And there's a cutout of Jane in my office. So that wherever we are, whatever we're doing, we don't forget that Jane is the actual customer, not us. So what's interesting about that is that my employees will come in my office and they'll say, hey, boss, I got an idea. And I'll point at the cardboard cutout of Jane because she's a customer. And I'll say, well, explain it to Jane. And they'll like, well, she's a housewife. She's not going to understand this. And I'll say, well, then I'm not interested. Now they come in my office. They look down at their, you know, their notepad, their idea. They glance over at the picture of the cardboard cutout of Jane, and then they just walk out without ever saying anything to me. You realize that unless we have a solution that our customer clearly understands, who cares what anybody else thinks? And it's all about the customer. So we do those cutouts so that our customer is ever present. And we always see her in the hallway, even though she's made out of cardboard. And we say, wait a minute, I'm building this for this housewife. And I don't think this is the way she would like it. It keeps on our toes and thinking about our customer.
So am I right in assuming that you've actually given Jane a whole persona and really delved into understanding what she likes and what she needs and where her issues are in terms of how you can, you know, things that you can solve and help her with?
Yes, absolutely. And you just have to continue to refine that profile of Jane. You know, the more you get to know her, the more you learn about her, the more you continue to refine that. So, you know, from customer service, from sales, we constantly have people update the profile. When people say, you know, I've been out there visiting with a lot of customers and I keep on hearing this and I'm starting to think our Jane, our customer cares more about A than B. So all I'm saying is it's a never-ending process to continue to learn about that customer and update your profile, because the more, you know, intimate you get with your knowledge of who your customer really is and what they want and how they want that to be delivered to them, the better you become at delivering what your customers love.
Yeah, that's great advice. I really like that. And we spend a lot of time working to understand the customer at that level. How do you, when you're doing that ongoing, you know, adding to that understanding, how do you ensure that everybody is aware of the new information and then have that association with the cardboard cutout so that when...
I think that's a great question. We post these things all over the walls. When you're walking to the restroom, this stuff is posted on walls. Real emails from real Janes. When customers email us, we blow them up like posters and we stick them on the wall. So you're walking to the break room to get coffee, and as you're walking, you're reading about four emails.
That's wonderful. I love it. So you're always, so you're living
inside and you're walking past them and you're reading those. Yep.
Yeah.
So wherever you are in the office, you can't get away from thinking about what Jane had to say and why.
Mm.
You keep it everywhere.
Yeah, that's great advice. I love that. So there's a real key lesson there for everyone, I think, in terms of really understanding your customer. And then coming back to those questions you asked earlier, and when you identify something that bothers you, that combining that with really understanding the customer, I think gives you a winning formula for moving forward.
Yes, I think so as well.
Yeah. All right. I was going to explore a little bit more about storytelling, and I'm curious how you go about putting together a presentation with a story. How do you select a story that's going to fit a particular topic? And, you know, you talked earlier about knowing who the audience is and what they're wanting to hear, but I'm just curious, how would you match a story if you have, like, often I get an idea and I think this would make a great story, but how do you then match that and how do you then develop that to deliver a particular message?
Yeah, so, you know, we don't really match it because they match themselves. And what I mean by that is we go out and collect real stories. If we are, when we were launching a travel service, right, the reason we're launching it is to get people where they want to go. So we made it a point to go ask a lot of people, where were you trying to go and did you get there and how did it work out? And we had people, the very first one was a woman that couldn't afford to go to her sister's wedding. And the only reason she got to go to her sister's wedding is because we offered discount travel. So she told the whole story of how excited she was, and she got to take the kids to her sister's wedding, and she met some cousins she'd never met before and some relatives that she didn't even know she had. And all this was made possible by our products and services. So what you have to do is go find the natural story. We ask people, tell us your story all the time. Hmm. And customers, because a customer story resonates with another customer way more than a story that you're trying to create. So that's why we ask, that's why we do that. We ask customers, tell us your real story. What really happened and when your life and how did it all spread out? And, you know, therefore, how do we fit into your story as a company? And when they share those, you just keep listening to them. And then it becomes obvious. You'll get one that you say, wow, that is a great story that all our customers can resonate with. Let's let her tell her story to the customers. So we shared real customer stories, obviously with their permission. But we got those by asking as many people as we could to tell us their story in the first place.
Mm. Yeah, I like that. It really comes back to the idea of being in the life of your customer, spending that time in the life of your customer and then bringing those stories in. And I think you mentioned earlier about that the customer really is, or the audience is the person you need to engage in the story.
Yes.
And if
absolutely.
They relate to, okay.
And even on your own content, your own website or whatever it is, having a little box that said, hey, tell us your story. Instead of you just pushing out content that tells the story you want to tell, what I'm saying is make it easy for people to share stories with you.
Hmm.
So we have on our content a place that says, hey, customer, tell us your story because we want to hear yours too. And if theirs winds up being better than the story we had, we go back and say, would you be willing to share your story? And of course, they almost always are.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a wonderful idea. I might have to implement that myself. Thanks for that. This is absolutely fascinating. I'm really loving this discussion and could go on for ages, but I'm cognizant of the time. So I think we should move on to the buzz, which is our innovation okay. round. And Excellent. It's designed to help our audience who primarily see themselves as innovators and leaders in their field with some tips from your experience. So I've got five questions and hopefully okay. we'll get some insightful answers that will inspire people to go and do something awesome today.
All right, very good.
So what's the number one thing you think anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
It's to spend time. So we mentioned the info sponging. It's to schedule time to leave your industry behind and go see what the rest of the world is doing. People get too caught up in staying in their lane. I'm in healthcare, so all I look at is healthcare. I schedule time every day, just a few minutes every day, to go see what the rest of the world is doing, to see if someone outside my industry came up with an idea that I could be the first one in my industry to apply.
Yeah, that's great advice. And there's so many examples of that, isn't there? Like Uber, for example, I think you mentioned that in one of your talks, and Airbnb is probably another example of where
exactly
they moved out of the traditional industry and combined something else from another sphere.
You got it.
All right. What's the best thing you've done to develop new products? And I think we've answered this one, but give us a snapshot.
We have, which is realize that I can learn way more outside of my office than I can in my office. So the best thing I've ever done is start to schedule days where I'm out in the world and not in the office. And my experience of being out in the world and around customers, if you're building something for use in airports, spend a day in an airport. And the more I started to do that, the more innovative our products became.
Yeah, and that's wonderful advice. And we've covered that in a fair bit of depth already. So we'll move on to the next one. What's one of the resources that you use most often?
These days, well, it depends on for what goal. Yeah. Like, for example, I think the scarcest capital in the world is not financial capital, it's human capital. So finding really talented people is really hard. So I spend a lot of time trying to find great people to build companies around, and LinkedIn has turned out to be my favorite resource for hunting for talent and meeting people. Because people on LinkedIn to meet other people, so they're open to networking. So we spend a lot of time looking for talented people to grow our companies on LinkedIn.
Okay, that's really great advice. And there's a lot of people doing some really interesting things on LinkedIn and exposing the power that's actually built into that software or platform that I think a lot of people are still to discover. So yeah, great advice. What's the best way to keep a project on track?
I think we call these stand-up meetings.
Mm-hmm.
Too many meetings slows down your productivity. But in the morning, we do a quick stand-up meeting. People grab a cup of coffee, and if you're standing, you'll go faster than if you get everybody seated.
That's right. Yeah.
Gather in project circles, and we just literally every morning say, how's it going? And if people say fine, I say, fine, go back to work. It's a five-minute meeting. And if someone says fine, but we can't really figure out what the customer meant by this, then I jump in. So we do the stand-up meetings, but we do them every day. Instead of you have a monthly meeting, and by then you're a whole month behind. And you're like, why didn't you tell me there was a problem? You said, I was waiting for the meeting.
Yeah.
We don't spread it out. We do a quick stand-up every day. And it's a really informal, how's everything going? And everybody just shares. If everything's going fine in your world, you don't have to say a word. Just say fine. And if you need help, you say you need help and the group jumps in. But by doing those every day, we never get very far behind.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a great way to tackle that. And I guess it does require a bit of a change of thinking from people that feel as though meeting is such a formal thing. You sit down, you get organized. And so if you don't have anything to say, it's a waste of having a meeting. But you've totally shifted that, haven't you?
We made them informal so people don't feel like they have to go prepare something and sit down and get refreshments. And again, a stand-up meeting is informal and it goes really fast.
Yeah. All right. That's a great piece of advice. What's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
You know, it's I mean, that's a pretty broad question.
Yeah.
So are you talking about as a company with its products or as an employee in a company?
Well, probably more as a company with its products, but certainly happy to take advice on for employees in a company.
Well, so, you know, I was assuming you meant the former with the company. And I think it's important. When I ask companies how they're doing, they tend to look at their competitors and then say, well, we seem to be doing fine. I think my answer to that question is track your competitors, but respond to your customers. Don't base your uniqueness over whether you're better than your competitors. Base it on whether or not the customer says, wow, you do something that nobody else does. And so I think that how you stand out and distinguish yourself is by being the one that's deeper into the customer and that spending more time asking. Literally, we ask customers, what could we do for you that would make us better, that could differentiate us from everybody else? And the customer knows. And what most people do is they look at their competitors and they compare themselves and they say, we're going to do this thing better than they do it. And that's the differentiator. You're giving your competitors too much credit. You're they know what they're doing. And in fact, if you ask the customer, they might say this. They might say, actually, none of you guys are doing exactly know how to do this. So they're saying, no one in the industry is really good at it. I wish someone would figure this out. So my answer to that is, if you really want to distinguish yourself, track your competitors, but respond to your customers and stop comparing yourself to the competition. Compare yourself to what a customer said needed to be done.
Yeah, that's great advice. And somebody once said to me along those lines that the competitors are not paying your salaries, the customers are. So
correct.
You'd be paying more attention to the customers. All right, thanks for getting us through the buzz, Jeff. That was really great. And now, where can people reach out and learn more about you and even say thank you?
Sure. So my email is easy enough. It's just jeff@jeffhoffman.com, spelled the American way, J-E-F-F, H-O-F-F-M-A-N. And I have a website, jeffhoffman.com, but I do most of my social connecting on LinkedIn. Be easy to find me there.
Okay. And we'll post links to the LinkedIn profile on the website on the show notes for this. Now, what's your number one piece of advice you'd give to any business owner who wants to be a leader in innovation?
I'm going to give you two. One of them we already covered in depth, which is get out of your office and start spending more time hanging around with customers and not being in the office all the time. And the second is, if you really want to grow, you got to spend time finding people smarter than you and letting go. You can't scale until you can let go. When you find someone smarter than you and let that person take over marketing, and then someone smarter than you and let that person take over operations. And as you empower people and let go, your business will start to grow. But if you're afraid to do that, you are always going to be the reason your business never really got that big.
Yeah, that's wonderful advice. It sort of follows along the principles of systemizing the business and making sure that you outsource, to use that word, I guess, the things that you're not really good at or not the best use of your time to other people who are better at that and who can make that contribution in a better way.
Yes.
All right, Jeff, finally, who would you like me to interview on a future InnovaBuzz podcast and why?
Wow. That is a fantastic question. Because my heroes are not the Richard Bransons and the Elon Musks and the people always want to hear from.
Yeah.
The ones I always want to know are these entrepreneurs that I meet that have no resources, nobody helping them, you know, come from some small or maybe even developing economy and are yet out there creating some amazing thing that I look at and I say, how did you do that? So I always want to hear from the unknown hero, from all-time entrepreneur that has built something really big and started with nothing. Finding those entrepreneurs because they can share how to do this with no resources and no help. And I think that's would have been extremely valuable to me when I was starting my career and didn't have any of those things.
All right. Do you have anyone in mind?
No, but you know what? I'm going to think about that and I may send you a follow-up email.
Okay. I'd really appreciate that. Thanks, Jeff.
You bet.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks so much for sharing your time and your insights with us on the Innova Buzz podcast so generously today. It's been a little time in the making, this interview, but it's been really worthwhile and I've enjoyed it immensely, learnt a lot, and I'm sure the audience will gain an enormous amount out of this interview as well. I wish you all the best for the future and let's keep in touch.
Thank you very much. I look forward to that.
I hope you enjoyed that insightful and engaging conversation with Jeff and, like me, found a lot of really valuable information in what he shared. There are a lot of insights in this interview. Some of the highlights for me were getting out of the office into your customer's environment to build your understanding of your customers and getting out of the office into different environments in different industries to see what you can learn there. I'd love to know what you took away from Jeff's episode. Leave a comment below the blog post, which can be found at innovabiz.co/Jeff Hoffman. That is JeffHoffman. All lowercase, all one word, innovabiz.co/Jeff Hoffman. You'll also find contact information for getting in touch with Jeff there, as well as links to his website and his LinkedIn page, as well as the other resources we spoke about in our conversation. Jeff suggested we interview an unknown hero, someone who has built a successful company from scratch with little outside resources, on a future InnovaBuzz podcast. He'll send us some suggestions after our interview, and you'll find those suggestions on the show notes too. Remember to visit innovabiz.co/VIP to access the Transformational Marketing Hub and all its free and exceptionally useful information to help you transform your marketing. You might also like to check out our new podcast, Tales of Marketing Transformation, at talesofmarketingtransformation.com. Tune in to the InnovaBuzz podcast again next week. We've got more fantastic guests lined up, including Julia Streets of Streets Consulting and Steve Glaveski, the author of the book Employee to Entrepreneur. Stay connected. Subscribe to the InnovaBuzz podcast so you'll make sure you'll never miss another episode. Head on over to innovabiz.co/subscribe. We'd also love you to leave us a review because what you think matters to us. Take some of the ideas you've heard today and apply them in your business. Any thoughts, ideas, suggestions, or questions, then share them in the comments below the blog post. And remember, if you want to get better marketing results than you ever have, join our fantastic Facebook community at the Tales of Marketing Transformation Facebook group. All you have to do is go to innovabiz.co/TMA. It's free to join. I hope to see you there soon. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember to be awesome and keep innovating.